welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, Skyping, maybe a little too much Pepto whiskey last night. Matt Moore, you're the one that knocks. How's it going?
I don't ever want to see that team again. Ever. I don't ever, ever want to see them again.
Well,
I hate that team. I hate it. They're so good. I hate it.
You've got between 2 and 5 more games. Probably closer to 2.
And it's like, you know, Grizzlies fans hate them. They're floppers and you know, they don't, all this other stuff. And I'm just like, it's just a bad matchup. It's not even so much of how good they are, because I think the gap between the Clippers and the Grizzlies is closer than it's been in the first two games. I think they're both very good teams. Memphis cannot match up with them. They just can't do it. They might be able to win 2 in Memphis. I don't think that's impossible. They played very well last night and made tactical adjustments, which Vinny Del Negro is unlikely to be able to retaliate.
Right.
It's going to be on, and it's going to be on Paul and Billups, and that's obviously a huge advantage. I think that Memphis might be able to steal 2. I was kind of starting to wonder for a little bit in the middle of game 2, from like the end of game 1 to the middle of game 2. I was like, is this going to be 5? This might be 5.
Was that, I mean, I don't remember who tweeted it, but someone said, you know, this is a tie game at the end of the fourth quarter, or near the end of the fourth quarter, and it feels like the Clippers are up 20. Was that like the biggest blowout game winner in NBA history? Like, it seemed like the Clippers just dominated that game. And it's a testament to the Grizzlies that, you know, you're a Chris Paul banked in runner away from sending it to overtime on the road, but it just didn't feel close at all.
Here's what I'm noticing, because I listen to The Basketball Jam, which is an excellent podcast you should listen to if you're not listening to us, but listen to us first, and if you're not watching Two Broke Girls.
You don't even have to listen to it, just download it. We just want the clicks.
As long as we're getting paid, we're fine.
Yeah.
And I've read different analysis, and it wasn't just Chuck on TNT, it was all over. There is a very wide reaction to that game last night, and your reaction is closer to my reaction. But I think it's notable, because I'm very much a pessimist with this Grizzlies team.
Yeah.
I think it's notable that there's a wide selection of, no, like, this is going to be a series. And then there's some people that are like, the Clippers totally outplayed them. And then there's some people that are like, you know, if this hadn't happened or if this hadn't happened. And I don't like going down the ifs road, but to me it shows that there's a very wide range of perceptions about this, because it's one where I agree with you, it did feel like that. But then, really, Memphis is able to put together – if Memphis can just get out of its own damn way,
yeah,
they have a great shot at winning this series. I don't think they can, because part of getting out of their own way is making open jump shots, which they can't do. But they're setting it up. That was what was amazing, I think, for most of the second half, was Memphis out-executed the Clippers. And even for most of really the game,
yeah.
Memphis executed the Clippers – but the Clippers outplayed them, and I don't know how many times I've seen that.
Yeah, it's a really weird balance, because you liked everything Memphis was doing. They were, you know, it would kind of pull away from them, they'd bring it back. Mike Conley was phenomenal. We criticized him after game one, saying he needs to do more, he needs to play better. And he matched Paul shot for shot up until Paul got one more shot at the end. And other than that, like, he was – like, the way he ran the pick and roll, the way he attacked the hoop, if you look at the execution of that final pick and roll where he gets Gasol the dunk, that is about as perfect as you can run a pick and roll. I mean, it is just textbook, like, it's in a scrimmage, like a non-contact scrimmage. I mean, it's just – it was perfect, perfect basketball. Conley was awesome. I walk away thinking, like, Zach Randolph is awful right now. And he's clearly injured. Like, something is keeping him from being able to do just the basic fundamentals that he always does. He was better last night, but there's just stuff with positioning and basic, like, staying low and boxing guys out and rooting guys out with your butt in post position. There's something not right. And if he can't be a consistent player for them, it seems like they cannot win this series if he doesn't do that. They can make it competitive. I mean, the series has been competitive. Even the 20-point loss, you know, it was competitive up until the final 10 minutes when things just kind of broke the Clippers' way completely, but they weathered every storm. It's just Chris Paul had the last shot.
Here's what's very odd. So, you know, I'm all about the sustainable offense, and Kenny talked about this at halftime with what Jamal was doing. I honestly still feel like what the Clippers do is a more sustainable approach than most of those kind of offenses that we see, primarily not only because of Crawford's skill. You know, even Chris Paul, like Chris Paul is not necessarily running all of these amazing sets. He had the one great pass on the pick and roll set to Griffin when the rotations broke down because Gasol had to step up to flash towards Paul, and then the rotation help didn't come down to help on Blake, and Tayshaun was like, I can't stop him. Right. I'm not going to try because I can't. But in general, the Clippers are doing – and last night the big plan for the Clippers was we're going to isolate. We're going to put you on an island with Chris Paul, and he's going to be better than you. And that was their offense for most of it. And that's honestly a really good tactic, especially when you think about the Grizzlies' defense, where we're going to make it to where – we're going to literally make it impossible for you to help. You can't help. You have – like, we're going to be able to go one-on-one, and our one-on-one players are better than your one-on-one players.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's part of the gap too. Randolph, you know, look, I talked a lot of this last night on Twitter. Like, he's not healthy. He wasn't healthy when I talked to him in March. He isn't healthy now. He keeps getting more banged up. It's a hard series because you're getting whacked and pushed and shoved and elbowed constantly. The Clippers give back everything Memphis gives. And also, there's not a way to get – you can't even engineer the matchup the way you want it.
Right.
Because Blake is more athletic than him and able to guard effectively in space enough to protect against the jump shot. And so your objective then is, okay, well, if we get him on the bigger guy, then he can shoot from range and hurt them that way. Well, you can't do that because DeAndre is 9 million feet tall and Ryan Hollins is long too. So he can't get that shot up over anybody. So then he's trying to bully his way in. And they're sending help, and they're tall.
Yeah.
So it's like this nightmare scenario. It's the one team you can't do this against. It's the one team in the playoffs that they match up better with Kendrick Perkins and Serge Ibaka, who are better than Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan at this point in their careers. He matches up better with that team. He matches up better with Tim Duncan and Tiago Splitter. It doesn't make much sense in terms of the quality of the players, but it's true.
Well, I think it can work, but he has to be healthy, and he's not healthy. Like, you can't be in the mud if you're standing on one foot, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem, is that he can do all that stuff against those guys when he's healthy, but he's not moving well, he's not getting low. We saw a couple of flashes, I think in the second half, where he grabbed offensive rebounds and went back up and finished with that, you know, really incredible touch around the basket, and that's where you're like, oh, Zach Randolph, it's awesome that you're here. Like, this is what the Grizzlies need. But for just, you know, whatever reason, I don't know, it's the ankle or what, but he just can't get that consistently right now.
I mean, there's two other things. One, Hollins, they made this comment after the trade, and I thought it was really weird because they were asking about post-touches. And he mentioned this in an interview with me and with an interview with somebody else. Zach said, well, that's our offense now. We're running pick and roll first.
Yeah.
And there was a note of discontent with it. And they really are running a lot of pick and roll, which I like the pick and roll. I'm a big fan of the pick and roll. It opens up your shooters. It opens up cutters. It opens up a lot of opportunities for you when you don't have great one-on-one players. So that's fantastic. The problem is the Grizzlies don't get into their sets until 17, 16, 15 on the clock. And if you're trying to run pick and roll, and especially in a playoff series where you're getting flashy, you have to step back and then reset it, or maybe you run it twice, that means that doesn't work, and you have to go to your secondary set. You're trying to force an entry pass with 6 seconds on the clock.
That's just not a lot of time.
Like, they need to switch it up to where if they – again, I always go back to the 2011 series because it's the only time they've been successful in the playoffs – a few times, run the ball up and just feed him. Just feed him and let him have some time to work. I'm okay with Zach Randolph ball stopping because he's pretty good in triple threat to be able to evaluate it. And that way, it's, you know, you're gonna at least get them thinking a little bit. Because if you're entering into pick and roll and every single time just initiate your offense, the Clippers are just going from do this and then do this and then do this, and they're not having to think about anything.
And you can even do, like, you know, smoke and mirrors misdirection stuff where it looks like you're setting up the pick and roll and then Randolph just flashes to the post, and you hit him with a quick entry pass and clear out. I mean, I think there's stuff you can do, and I'm not going to pretend to be a better coach than Lionel Hollins by any means, but it just seems like they get – there's nothing wrong with running pick and roll, but you have to just switch it up. Otherwise, the defense knows what's coming, and they're going to – you know, it's well scouted. They're going to know pretty much every call anyway, but you've got to have some kind of switch it up where maybe you're running a pick and roll, but you run it more to the – you, instead of attacking the basket, you have the screener kind of flare out to the middle of the floor, and you're going more to the side than you are going toward the basket, and Randolph comes across for a screener. You know, there's just so much you can do, and you would just like to see more variation out of them.
Now, that said, they were creating open corner looks, and guys, Tayshaun Prince, Jared Bayless, Mike Conley, guys are just missing.
Yeah.
Somebody... Keon Dooling, Quincy Pondexter, Jared Bayless, and I'm willing to give Austin Day and Tony Roten some time, and the Hollins won't. That's why they probably won't win the series. Like, this is the time when it's like, we have to find somebody who's hot right now.
Right.
Our guys aren't, and this makes me crazy. I understand all the reasons you don't want to play Austin Day and Tony Roten. I really do. They're not very good. They really are. They're very bad. Shooting is an inconsistent thing, and when you need offense, sometimes you have to be like, okay, we've got four good defenders. We're going to have a guy out. I mean, you do it with Jared Bayless. So, you know, you've got to have some sort of trust in him. Meanwhile, you know, oddly, here's what's bizarre. Okay, Grizzlies won the rebounding battle. They lost the offensive rebounding battle only by one after a horrendous first half. They really cut down on it.
Right.
They won the rebounding battle by one. The Clippers shot four more threes and only hit one more. They contained the perimeter shots. You know, they only lost the assist battle by three. They only lost they won the turnover battle, the Grizzlies did. You look at that model of that game and you're like, everything leans towards a Grizzlies win except the final score.
Yeah, and the difference is Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And it just like, you know, I'm watching the latest episode of Open Court, and Charles Barkley in it is talking about how, you know, this is something you and I have talked about extensively before, is how in this league, the best team always wins. And he even says there are no upsets, which I don't necessarily agree with that, but his reasoning for it is pretty solid of like, hey, this isn't a one and done, like this is, you have to win four games out of seven. You don't do that by accident. Like, you do that by earning it. And I agree with that to a certain extent, but talent in the league, especially when you get to this point in the season, talent usually wins out. And as good as Mike Conley has been and was last night, and as good as Marc Gasol is, and as good as Zach Randolph is, nobody on that court is as good as Chris Paul. And he is just so measured in the way he wants to destroy you. You can't say anything about him that hasn't been said, but it, just to reiterate, like, it's the way he sizes you up, and yeah, he pushed off a little bit, but that's basketball. People push off on almost every play, and it's kind of allowed as long as it's not a high push off, you know, as long as you're not pushing up around the chest or the neck. And I actually thought, like, the Grizzlies played really good defense on that final play. Tony Allen's all over him. He gets away with a little bit of a reach in, and then the push off happens. But Tony Allen's all over him. Darrell Arthur could have broken away a little bit from Blake, not getting help. You got to be smarter than that. But Chris Paul is just the difference. He's the most talented player on the court, and he's the most talented player in a way that you can't get the ball out of his hands. Like, he's just going to keep it because he knows exactly how much time he needs to accomplish whatever he wants to do next.
Well, I got two thoughts there. Darrell has to get out of that. He's just got to, you know, and that means he's got to elbow Blake Griffin in the stomach. He's got to elbow Blake Griffin in the stomach. He's got to get out of that to help. He just does. Tony's got to force him left. He knew it. That's why he apologized on Twitter tonight. Like,
yeah.
That's where he knew he went wrong, is he's got to make him go left. He was trying to pressure him because, and people don't remember this, Allen actually forced a lot of steals on Chris Paul in the series last year, which nobody really likes to talk about because Chris Paul is awesome, and we want to reinforce that.
Right.
Chris Paul can be awesome, and Tony Allen can force steals, and that those two things are not separate.
Right.
Like, Chris Paul is going to score on Tony Allen more than Tony Allen is going to cause steals. That doesn't mean that nobody is invincible against Tony Allen in like 100 possessions. You're just right. not. I guess those elite defenders are too good.
And Tony Allen was awesome.
He was awesome.
He was so good last night.
The problem also, though, is like, you know, if he forces him left, then you've also got to worry about Darrell coming over, and then you get the weak side lob. Like, it's almost an impossible situation.
Yeah.
It really is with Paul, and that's part of the problem, but he's got to come off sooner, and those are the kind of little things. The fouls it's ridiculous because if the referees don't start swallowing their whistles in the fourth quarter, the Grizzlies don't make that comeback.
Right.
They finally got the kind of game that they wanted, which was it was wild, it was physical, bodies were flying everywhere, guys were getting hurt. Like, that's how Memphis wants it, so they can't complain when things don't get called. That's how you want it. You want things not called. You want to be based on merit, effort, and toughness.
Right.
Grizzlies hit their free throws. They may not win that game, but they're going to have a hell of a lot better chance.
Yeah, missed 11.
I talked about it. Like, they outworked them.
Yep.
And they out-executed them, but they still didn't have the talent, and then they didn't have their fundamentals. That was the thing I forgot to mention the other day. You also have to do things in a smart manner, like do things like hit your freaking free throws.
Yep. Jamal Crawford's fun.
Which is your favorite?
I was going nuts when he went on that little run. Like, I felt like a child. I was so giddy.
Which was your favorite?
I think that through the legs and then that it's just an awful shot. Like that he's like leaning back from like, I don't know, 19 feet on the right wing. He had gone through his legs a couple times, I think once around his back, and then Bayless actually is all over him.
Yep.
It's a good defense, but
it looked like great defense last night. Nope.
Yeah, it's just and that's the fun thing about him is that the defense doesn't really matter with Jamal Crawford because it's so like his dribble is so predatory. Like it lures you out because he brings like he starts coming at you with this really high dribble. And then all of a sudden you're close enough to do something and it gets really low and really quick I wrote about it this morning and then I was tweeting about it last night. It's a game of three card Monty. Like you're trying to find the queen of clubs and you think you've got it and all of a sudden you've lost $20. Like you don't know what hits you. Like it's such a sleight of hand with him, even though the ball is the size that it is and you don't know where it is. It's so much fun.
Matt Barnes had a good game. He was a big impact player. That's going to continue to be a big thing for them, as if he can do that. Like, he's going to have to be that guy.
Yeah.
He only hit 2 of 5, but he drew fouls. He had knocked down his free throws. He had rebounds. He had the big dunks. Like, those are big plays for him. Like that's 7 points. He was plus 15.
Yeah.
That metric's always filled with a lot of noise, but there was an impact felt there.
Bledsoe, in limited minutes, was very disruptive.
Yep.
Very disruptive.
They have more weapons. That's,
and that's God. That's where I think Tony Roten should be in the game.
You gotta let Tony Roten.
He is a turnover waiting to happen, possibly against Bledsoe because Bledsoe is so aggressive. But I actually think with kind of a wild player like Tony Roten, that aggressiveness plays into his hand. Like
nobody to bring energy off the bench right now. Quincy Pondexter is a smart player. Jared Bayless is Jared Bayless.
Right.
That's not a bad thing. It's just Jared's that guy.
Yeah, and Tony might be one of those players that the more aggressive a defender gets, the better it is for him because he's not thinking anything through. It becomes all instinct. It becomes all reactive. And when it's reactive and it's instinct, his instincts are great. His instincts are sick. Like, the passes he makes, the dribble moves he makes, I think if you get aggressive with him, which Bledsoe would certainly do because this guy's a rookie, just try it for 3 minutes in the second quarter. I'm begging you, try it. I think you'll get a spark.
You're drowning anyway.
Like, exactly. Exactly.
You played Mike Conley 44 minutes. He's going to die.
Like, all I can think of is the movie Sunset Park. Is they need a spark. They bring in the crazy kid. He starts flying all over the court doing Dennis Rodman stuff. Tony Roten is your kid from Sunset Park. He might even have grown up with a place called Sunset Park. We don't know. There's no way of knowing.
Anyway, fun game. We'll see. Clippers take game 3. I'm going to have a hard time picking them against them in game 4. I wouldn't be surprised at a sweep.
Yeah, I agree. I think if the Grizzlies win game 3, I think it goes back to L.A. 2-2. And then I think if the Clippers win game 3, it's a sweep.
So we'll see what happens. Because I mean, I'm going to be interested because Memphis is an inconsistent history with these sucker punch games. Sometimes they respond incredibly well, and sometimes they really don't. Sometimes they're like, "Well, that's it.
Yeah,
tried our hardest, not good enough. That sucks." So I was very thankful yesterday watching the first game that you and I hedged our bets and said, you know, the Bulls could win tonight.
Woo, we just got that in at the last second, didn't we?
Just like slipped that.
Just we, the door. We talked them down, we talked up the Nets, and they were like, yeah, but it could go the other way.
And thank God, because Joakim Noah decided to just destroy all of the narrative.
What happened to Deron Williams? He looked lazy. I mean, he distributed well. He like, I don't know, 10, 11 assists. And I don't think he turned the ball over that much, but his shot selection was just like, eh, I'll put this up, I guess.
I keep waiting for the problems to come back, because everyone was like, oh, he's gotten it together, or he decided to take over. And I'm like, he got cortisone shots, and he can play with therapy, and eventually those things are going to wear off.
Yeah.
Like, cortisone only works for so long.
Right.
That's why doctors won't give it to you constantly.
Right.
There's a point. And it's not that he looked like his ankle was hurting, it's just, you know, but I also don't want to assume. Maybe he just had a bad night. Maybe it's just one of those nights for him.
Sure. But, I mean, joking, no, it was just, like, I felt like I wanted to go run through a wall. Because of what he was doing. Like, there was a point where I sat up on the couch and I'd had back problems last week and it's still like a little tight. And I was like, I'm watching him do all this stuff. I was like, I could probably get up and do something right now. I should do a push up or something.
My jaw is dropping him on one foot. Just,
yeah.
You know, and he had 2 feet, but still, it was also amazing though to me because I was like, he dunked, and you could tell he was like, "Crap,
yeah.
Like, I'm gonna land on this thing." Like, he's trying to make sure he gets the foot right.
Yeah, our friend Steve McPherson wrote a great like Vince Carter piece a month and a half ago, for the New York Times blog, and the whole like storyline of it is Vince Carter saying like, you know, when you get older, it's not the dunk, it's the landing that hurts. It's the landing that wears on you, and it's just, like, always coming down like that. And I was just thinking, like, I know Noah is not an old guy right now, but his feet are making him old, and I bet every landing from all those dunks are just brutally painful.
It's also amazing, because, like, he would yell when he dunked, like, ha! And then he would land and go, ha!
Yeah.
Ha! Yeah! Ow!
It was like, I did something. Oh, right. That hurts.
That hurts. Nazi Mohammed.
Oh, my God.
Agent Naziro.
I mean, he was the greatest player I've ever seen.
Just knocking down everything.
I couldn't handle it. Like, I think he had hit maybe 2 shots at this point, and he only made 4 for the game, but I think he'd hit 2 shots, maybe 1. And it's kind of a broken play where they're hustling the ball up the court. And Jimmy Butler has it, I don't know, around the hash mark in the front court. And Nazi Muhammad is crossing half court with both hands screaming for the ball. I'm like, you're 45 feet away from the basket and you're Nazi Muhammad. What the hell do you think you're going to do? And then about a minute later, he knocks down this incredible, I don't know, 17-foot jumper. And I'm just like, oh, right, you're Nazi Muhammad. You're a superhero right now.
Someone who's not going to get a lot of credit, and it's one of those, it's kind of a nice kind of game because it's, I always look at points versus shots. So it's like, oh, Carlos Boozer only had 13 points on 12 shots, but he shot 50% from the floor. Carlos Boozer was very good last night.
He's been really good, even in the blowout. He was probably their best player in the blowout. He's been very solid the first 2 games.
So 13 points on 12 shots, 12 rebounds, which is massive. They control the glass. You know, Jimmy Butler didn't have a great game, but he made some plays. Nate got 11 on 11 shots. But really, I mean, their defense was that. I mean, that's the Bulls. That's what you want to see from them.
Yeah.
And Brooke Lopez is came to play.
Brooke Lopez was fine. You didn't see much out of Gerald Wallace. Reggie Evans was. I mean, Reggie Evans still got 8 rebounds in 23 minutes, but he was kind of negated. It really seemed like
he's exposed defensively. They were putting him in situations where he's being targeted.
Yeah, and Joe Johnson had a little late flurry, but really, Brooke Lopez and C.J. Watson were the only players that kind of showed up. Interesting strategy going with Andre Blatch so heavily down the stretch.
Provocative, I thought.
Sure, very provocative.
Because really, I mean, look if you're facing a guy like Joakim Noah that plays his heart out, the only way to counter that is with Andre Blatch.
Is with unrelenting apathy.
And it was really great because he just wasn't caring at all on defense or rebounding at all. And just targeting a shot.
Yeah.
Just shopping for points.
I rarely think that I know more than an NBA coach or even close to the same amount. But there was a point in the fourth quarter I was like, PJ, I don't know about this. I feel like we need to talk.
Are you sure?
I mean, Andre Blatch has had a good season. He's had a good bounce back season. But we need to talk. This is not going well.
For Darren, isn't 8-10-4, if that was Ricky Rubio, wouldn't you think that was a good line? Not even Ricky Rubio, because that's a personal thing. I'm trying to think of like another acceptable point guard that doesn't shoot well. Like Rondo. If Rondo had 8-10-4, would you think that was a bad game?
I have a problem with the majority of the 9 shots being 3-pointers. And I know it's just a 5-4 thing, but
it really felt like he was just jacking them.
Like, and Kirk Heinrich's a fine defender still. You know, he can get after a little bit, but like you gotta be in the basket. And I know the Bulls cut that off as well as anybody, but you've gotta be in the paint at the basket like a few times. And a part of that was the Bulls didn't miss shots. I mean, they shot over 50% for most of the game. And ended up at, I think, 48% for the night. And when they're not making when they're not missing shots, you know, Brooklyn can't get out in transition, which is how they killed them early in game one. But you're Darren Williams, Darren Williams is the best player in this game. He has to play like it.
Kirk Heinrich just doesn't get the credit that he deserves. I love Kirk Heinrich. I've loved Kirk Heinrich since college, even though he's a KU guy, which is odd. I just think that he plays with a lot of integrity and a lot of he plays smart and he plays hard and he plays within himself and he doesn't get the credit I think he deserves and Bulls fans hate him this year and that bugs me. And I thought he was great last night. Ran the offense effectively.
Yeah, he was solid.
Yeah, it's like he's not a star. He's just good.
Yeah,
like,
he's a nice role player to have.
Yeah,
it's kind of the way it's kind of like the Luke Ridenour for the Timberwolves. Like the fans hate him, but you're like, look what he's asked to do and what he should be asked to do, and he's doing a pretty good job.
How do you feel like the series is going? Do you feel? I mean, it's a big win, obviously, for Chicago. They're getting home court.
That's massive. I think the winner of Game 3 will win the series. I think you have to see how Chicago can respond because we've seen two completely different looks from them in the first two games. And, you know, you'd like to think that the second look we got is more them because that's typically what they do, but you just don't know because they're so banged up, because everything can go so wrong. If Noah is physically incapable of mustering up that kind of energy and that kind of effort in the next game, like you just don't know how he'll be able to respond physically. And we've seen two hugely different looks from Brooklyn. And, you know, I fear that they're going to be more like game two than game one. You did mention this on Twitter last night, and I would like to ask you, just for maybe an official total, if you have it off the top of your head, how many tweets did you get after game one compared to game two?
It was odd. It was very strange because after game one, I had all these Nets fans that haven't talked to me in months just hitting me up and saying, how's that looking now? And you picked them in 7. But you feel pretty stupid. And I got things like, you realize that we match up the best with Miami. And then last night, I had nothing. It was odd. Like, all of my mentions were just empty of all Nets fans. It's very strange.
That's
odd. Peculiar.
That's odd. I would never think of the internet to be that way.
Like, When I get upset at people for underrating something, or if I disagree with them and then they turn out to be right, I really do try and find them and be like, hey, my bad. Like, you're right on that one. Unless it's something where it's contextually, it's like, well, that's not really what happened. I'm very open about, like, people keep waiting to go to the Memphis and see me, like, gloating or complaining about calls or whatever, and I'm always like, nope, they lost, they're not very good.
This is why I try not to overreact to things. This is why I try to stay as measured as I can, because I just feel like it's bound to bite me in the ass. Like, if you freak out about something one way, unless it's, like, very overt, like, oh, LeBron James is the best player in the league, and every good performance I can freak out about because he's that good. I don't feel like overreacting to something that's going to benefit me down the road, because I'm just going to look like an idiot.
Like, you look at the whole picture. Like, it's fine to say that regular season match individual games are not important or don't matter, and that's fine. But you need to look at things like the Bulls have been a very good team for 3 years.
Yeah.
They've been a very good – they've been a great team for 3 years.
Same system, same core. That matters.
Brooklyn's been very inconsistent this year. They've looked great at times. They've looked really crappy at times.
Which makes sense because they haven't been together that long.
Right. And they lack a lot of the pieces that I think that you look to in terms of stability. Like, they don't have those veteran guys you know you can always count on who are going to bring it and play hard. They have Andre Blatch. Like,
right.
You know, like, not to target him too much because he had a good season, but that's the kind of guys that they have. And they're going to get better, and it's gonna work out for them, I think, in the long run. They're going to be, you know, it's year one. But this is going to be a series, and we'll see kind of how it goes.
Baby steps. It's all about baby steps. And who knows? I mean, I picked them in seven. I think they'll probably still win the series. I think they'll win the next game. I think they'll respond well, but it was kind of a nice, like, ego check last night.
Where can I buy the commemorative Joakim Noah kicked our ass in our own building T-shirt?
Oh, that's going to be in the team shop on the main concourse.
They will sell anything. They will market anything. I'm waiting for, like, their second round T-shirt. I really am. I mean, it's just amazing, that team. My favorite moment from this Nets season, when people asked me about them in terms of what their identity was early in the year when they were on Yes, and it was the Brooklyn Nets. Brooklyn Nets basketball brought to you by the Brooklyn Nets. They sponsored themselves.
Yes.
And I get that they were trying to find sponsors at that point for the programming. I don't care.
That's where you got to pull an EJ stat of the night and just go, sponsored by nobody.
Thoughts on Paul George? Most improved player.
I'm fine with it. I would have picked Larry Sanders because I think he actually improved more than Paul George. You know, a lot of what Paul George did was usage-based. He got more shots. He was good with them. I don't think he was as good of a player as people kind of have in their minds this year, but he is. This is something I wrote in the post that I think is important, is it's possible that his skill set didn't improve that much, but his consistency improved, and that's a huge part of improving in the NBA, is learning how to be consistent through the ups and downs. And so if that's the reason he is the most improved player, I'm fine with that.
I'm annoyed with it, and it's really odd because Pacers fans' initial reaction is anger that I think that Paul George isn't that good, and I'm trying to tell everyone he was so good last year, and no one noticed. Like, yeah. He figured out how to run the curl screen effectively. He figured out how to balance on the perimeter when he was driving or when it passed, how to work in the flow of the offense. He learned how to attack more aggressively. He grew a little bit more into his body. He was so good last year. Last year was a phenomenal jump for Paul George. It was a great jump for Paul George. The gap between where he was last year and the all-star that he was this year, the peripheral all-star that he was this year, is just simply not as great as it was for other players in this league. Yeah. That is not an insult to Paul George. It is, I already respected Paul George to a high degree. And if you look at the numbers are going to back me up, because everyone talks about, I'm getting points per game numbers out the wazoo this morning. His per 36 numbers are largely the same except for points, and he increased approximately the same number of shots.
Right.
He had a higher usage. He had a bigger role in the offense with Granger out. He made approximately the same number of shots.
Which, like, I will say that he had a different role with the team this year than he did last year, and he accepted that role very successfully, and that does show improvement. I mean, that's a different role, and that's improvement to be able to pull that off. But I still think, like, I mean, I personally would have voted for Larry Sanders because he kind of not came out of nowhere, but
he was nobody last year.
Yeah.
He was nobody, and he is a legit defensive player of the year candidate. He is able to produce offensively. He looks like a basketball player. Like, that was phenomenal for him. I still would have gone with Drew Holiday, and I can't believe the people that he ended up so low on the list. I just can't. I can't really understand why people don't. I mean, it bugs me that Philadelphia sucks so bad, and everyone just really forgets Drew Holiday. You talk about taking a bigger role on a team. Like, Paul George had to fit in, had to take a larger role as a primary weapon on a team that's got several of them. He had to replace another guy's production as part of a unit. Drew Holiday was the only damn thing on Philadelphia worth a damn outside of Thaddeus Young. The only thing on that team worth a damn.
Yeah.
Like, and he still had a phenomenal assist rate. He still had phenomenal scoring figures.
Right.
He still had phenomenal individual gains throughout the season. If they didn't like Spencer frickin' Hawes, they might have wound up in the playoffs. Like, forget Bynum. It's Hawes. They signed Spencer Hawes and Kwame Brown before the trade, thinking that was going to be their core. Like, and I'm all on board with how terrible they were, and Drew had a bad last month, and he had a lot of problems in execution late in games. But overall, Drew was phenomenal, and it really bugs me he didn't get more credit. I think it was Vasquez probably deserved a little bit. Now, Vasquez is hard because it's one where the voters didn't know this. The reason most people didn't vote for Grievous Vasquez is because they went, who? But
it's because they don't know how to spell his name.
Right. And it's hard. It is hard. I mess it up. I think the ones that do actually pay attention to this stuff, though, probably talk to Monty Williams. And Monty Williams would tell you, look, somebody was going to get the assist on our team. We play in a style that's conducive to assist making. He did play very well, but he had a lot of assist problems or a lot of defensive problems, and he gunned too much for his assists.
Yeah.
Like, that's just kind of what happened. The numbers do kind of lie a little bit about Grievous. Now, I think Grievous deserved to be second because of I saw him when he first going from where he was when he came out of Maryland, which I was like, there is no way this kid plays in the NBA, to him being a starter that led the league in assist rate after Rondo went down. I think that's probably worth a mention. It's not that Paul George didn't improve. Paul George improved phenomenally this year, but this is always what we talk about. It's a matter of there's a bunch of deserving people, and we're talking about degrees.
Right. I am glad that it wasn't a second-year player that won it.
Yep.
Because
I talk about Vucevic, and I'm just like, you have no idea what he was capable of last year.
Right, because,
like,
he didn't play.
No idea.
That should
never be considered.
The whole Paul George, Grievous Vasquez angle, you know, they showed some improvement last year and carried that over this year and did a much better job. And it reminds me of Ryan Anderson winning it last year, where it was like, well, he didn't improve at all. Like, Ryan Anderson improved a little bit as an offensive rebounder, but other than that, like, he was the exact same player. Whereas you had other guys who legitimately improved, like Nikola Pekovic and Ersan Ilyasova, and that was frustrating. But I do think that – I think Paul George was more deserving this year than Ryan Anderson was last year, personally.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would definitely agree with that. Again, I'm a big Paul George guy. I love the kid. I think he's phenomenal. I love his approach to the game. He hasn't fallen into many bad habits yet.
Right.
People don't really notice that. Like, it's one thing I've started to look at having now doing this for the longer I go. The young guys will go through this phenomenal progression, and you'll be really excited about their future, and then their attitude kind of shifts when they get the attention.
You know, I like to
develop some bad habits.
I've coined a little phrase for that. I like to call it the Josh Smith.
Yep.
That's what happens.
And, you know, and so these young guys, you really want to see kind of what happens with them. And sometimes it's not that, sometimes it's injury. I mean, God, you know, we thought Derrick Rose and Kevin Love would be in MVP consideration. Neither one of them had a shot because of injury this year, and it
right.
sucks. It would, guys like that.
It would have been kind of cool for Kevin Durant and LeBron James to both get a bunch of MIP votes because they did improve. I understand, like, they don't need more accolades than they're already going to get.
Thing. Everybody's like, we can't vote them for everything.
Yeah, exactly. But that,
you could legitimately make a case for LeBron to win the trifecta MVP that I talked about, most improved
yeah.
player.
I mean,
East's man somehow, I don't know.
How. To be honest, I do think that Kevin Durant should have been Rookie of the Year over Damian Lillard, personally. feel like he had a better rookie year this year, if you want to call it that. But no, I don't know. I'm glad that so far with the awards, and I know this isn't the same for you, I feel like I'm not angry at any of them. So I'm, like, happy. As long as I don't get angry at the awards, I generally don't care.
I'm trying not to get upset about the voting. I'm trying really hard this year. And, like, I spent a lot of time on baseline awards trying to talk about how the stuff, why the stuff matters about how the awards should be considered.
Sure.
Take a lot of different perspectives that aren't necessarily my own, but outside opinions. And
you did a very good job with that, I feel like. Throughout, like, seeing the progression throughout the season, I feel like you hit every angle that needs to be addressed.
Well, and it's hard because people really hate the awards a lot of the time, and they think it's stupid, and they especially think it's stupid early, but I want to be able to track it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's frustrating for me because I know that most people aren't reading it, especially the voters aren't going to read it. It's frustrating because I really want to be like, look, it's not just my opinion. This is like a whole conglomeration of ideas about what this award and how it should be considered and why you need to make sure that you're paying attention to this stuff, because the stuff does matter in terms of guys get contracts and that can influence hirings and firing. Like, everything can – all this stuff matters. Chaos there in the NBA. Like, all these factors go in and influence things, and you should pay attention to it. I'm trying – in years past, I've gone so crazy over it. I'm really trying not to. Like, the Luke Babbitt getting a vote yesterday for sixth man was okay. Joke.
I do like every once in a while people kind of bastardize the whole process. It's like when P.J. Brown got a fifth-place MVP vote years ago.
Right.
I know it ruins everything, but I do kind of enjoy the anarchy of it all.
It creates great jokes on the internet.
Like, oh, sure.
You know, the best part. I mean, Carmelo Anthony got an NYP vote this year.
Sure.
You know, Kawhi Leonard, second year, he got one. Aaron Aflalo got one.
Aflalo played like 8 games.
And was horrific. Like,
right.
For a historic shooter, really, not a good look. You know, Robin Lopez, who I think really did improve this year, but to be most improved, or even get a third place vote. Lance Stephenson should have gotten more.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's really ridiculous that nobody kind of noticed that he was unforgivably awful. He was Dexter Pittman's counterpoint in that series last year.
Yeah.
And he was a legitimate player this year. Kenneth Faried, who I like a lot and has improved in a lot of ways, there's no way you can look at his production and think that he improved. He just had a good year.
Second year guy. You know, I generally don't like those guys being considered.
I actually, you know, I had thought about it. I might have actually given Ibaka more consideration had I thought about it more.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't think for like a first or second place vote, but I could see a third place vote or two.
Yeah, he got several. He got 3 votes for second, which I don't think is necessarily. I don't think that's bad. I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Him being able to stretch out to the 3-point line is a pretty vital improvement on his part. Offensively, for him to be that kind of a weapon for them. You know, I think he's bad. Omer Asik, are people high? He's a defensive player, and he's on the worst defensive team.
Well, that's not fair.
That's his fault, man. But
that's not fair.
There's got to be some sort of an element there, because I do feel like if they had Larry Sanders, it might be different. So
no, not at all.
Okay.
That team is so bad and so broken down defensively. One guy is not fixing that.
So yeah, what did you think about Mark Gasol is reported to be Chris Vernon's show. Chris Vernon, who's a friend of mine in Memphis, reports yesterday that Mark's going to get Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, I love it. It's I think it's absolutely the right call, and it's cool that, you know, Tyson Chandler won it, and he's not a big shot blocking guy, but I like it when guys are winning it for merit and not just for cool stats.
I think we're getting better.
Yeah,
I need to see where Serge Ibaka ends up this year. But I really do think we're getting better. I'm serious. Like, I think we're getting better. Again, Serge Ibaka's a good defender. Just, he doesn't need to be in the top five. He just doesn't.
Sure.
Top five. And Iguodala is probably going to wind up seventh or eighth, and it's going to irritate me. As is, like, I think Tony Allen might get third.
That would be cool. I would like him to be in the top three.
I'm sure, you know, some big name is going to get second. I feel like Tyson's going to get a lot of votes, and that's going to bug me too, because Tyson's had a down year from where he was last year, and he's been good, but not.
Yeah, I have a hard time. I don't like comparing what a guy did the previous year, because I believe every year needs to be taken in its own context.
Yeah.
However, I don't think Tyson was that good defensively. He wasn't bad, but I don't think he was top, like, 5 or even 10 consideration. I just feel like a lot of players outplayed him defensively. And there's many factors that go into that. But it's not a knock on him per se. It's just like, this is a different year. We need to treat it as such.
Well, my point more was, you know, with Dwight had years where he would play worse than the year before, but still better than everyone else.
Right.
You know,
I'm not going to let this carnage you've thrown Omer Sheikh's way go. CornNBA.com. They on the court 101.3 defensive rating, off the court 107. I don't think it was his fault.
Fair enough. That's fair.
There's a lot of noise in that, but that's all I'm going to use right now.
No, that's fair. I'm hoping Duncan gets second. I don't know if he is or not. I can't tell what the voters have been. He should, because he's got the stats on both ends, where he's got the huge increase in blocks and he's got the defensive rating. He's got the best defensive rating in the league.
Yeah.
So I feel like he should, like, and he's a big name, even though it's the Spurs. I feel like he should, but, you know, because I mean, I would be okay with that. I voted for it or I didn't vote, but I put down my picks Iguodala and Gasol as a split because I value wing defenders, but
yeah.
I would be okay with a 1-2-3 of Gasol, Duncan, Tony Allen.
Yeah, I would be more than happy with that. And kind of sucks that Iguodala gets left out, but you can only have three guys in the top three.
Math.
Yep.
Before we go real quick, while we were doing this podcast, Mike Dunlap has been fired of the Charlotte Bobcats.
Curious decision, no?
No, not from where I've been at.
It's a weird thing because it was such a curious hire. It was a really weird hire, and he had really weird ideas of ways to change it that were very college-oriented, and it's like, you're already at a talent disadvantage. You need to tighten things up.
I wonder if they've got a line on somebody else. I also think a lot of it was just that that approach where you're so abrasive only works if you're winning.
Right.
Because if you're losing, it's like, why am I working this hard? You know?
I do think in this case that when they word it like the Charlotte Bobcats have relieved Mike Dunlap of his coaching duties, I do think it is actual relief.
Oh, thank God.
They're like, hey, Mike, we appreciate what you've done this year. We're going to have to relieve you of your duties. He's like, oh, by all means.
By all means.
Go for it. I respect your decision.
So you know what this opens up the possibility for?
Stan Van Gundy?
Mike D'Antoni gets fired and then goes to coach the Charlotte Bobcats like it should have happened in the first place.
That's a terrible idea.
I'm never letting go of it. No, man, Kemba Walker, Michael Kidd Gilchrist. In D'Antoni's system.
I mean, I think you always want guys who can't shoot in Mike D'Antoni's system.
They have shooter. Kemba Walker can shoot. Ben Gordon can shoot.
Oh,
Sessions can drive.
Oh, are we still pretending Ben Gordon's an NBA player that should be on a team? Okay. Yeah, then it's a great idea.
If they re-sign Gerald Henderson, he can shoot.
What? I mean, I like Gerald Henderson. I actually would love him on the Timberwolves. Why don't we shoot for better players? Let's shoot for that. Instead of having all these guys.
No one will sign.
We'll make some damn trades. Draft.
Who are you going to trade on that team?
The amazing
Reggie Williams?
The amazing Ben Gordon and all of his splendid wonder.
They can't. He's a cancer on an $11 million contract.
Oh, he's a cancer. Well, let's give him more shots then.
They have nothing else. That's my point. That's the problem with the Bobcats. There's no hope.
I would rather give Blake Ahern his shots than Ben Gordon.
I love Blake Ahern.
I know you do. I was just trying to make you happy there.
So wonderful. Such a good kid.
Let's preview tonight.
Oh, tonight. I forgot we had games.
We got three of them. You'll be at one of them.
I will be at one. I will be at Nuggets Warriors 2, which is going to be a very interesting. This is going to be pretty interesting because the Nuggets pretty much have to win this one. They had to win game one, but they also had to win this one.
Yeah, it's just going to be so weird to see without David Lee how the Warriors respond. Like, was that a flurry from Andrew Bogut, or is he starting to round back into form?
They're going to try and play Barnes at the four, and they can do that if Wilson. I don't even know if they can play that with Wilson in, because Wilson's real good.
Yeah, that's a tough matchup for. I mean, in a couple of years, I like that matchup for Barnes, but that's tough right now.
And I mean, if he starts Barnes against Fareed, I don't care how banged up Fareed is. Fareed's going to get mad.
Yeah.
The Nuggets are favored by 8.
Ooh, that's a lot of points.
They're expecting this one to return to form because it's a 207.5 over under.
Yeah, I mean, it's unlikely these teams play back-to-back duds. I mean, 97-95, but still kind of a dud.
I guess for me, it's, you know, are they, you know, because I don't think the Warriors are going to wait from zone. I think they're going to use more zone. I think they're just going to tighten it. I think they're going to say, okay, this time when we play zone,
right,
not go all the way out to the 3-point line.
Right. Especially on a team that can't hit 3-point shots. Yeah, I guess I like the Nuggets to cover. I don't feel good about that at all. I kind of feel like the Warriors win.
I'm taking Warriors to cover. I don't know if they'll win. I'm taking Warriors to cover. I think the series is going to be tight. Even if it goes, you know, I have zero confidence in five games, but I do not, you know. I will say, though, if they win this one, it's just going to put an immense amount of pressure on a Warriors team that's going to be frustrated to win game three.
Yeah, and a Warriors team that is good at home, but they're not dominant at home.
Yeah.
All right. We hedged so well yesterday. You're taking the Warriors to cover, but the Nuggets to win?
Yeah.
I'm going to take the Warriors to win, and then we'll just pretend Royce said, oh, no, the Nuggets are going to blow them out.
Okay.
That way the whole Ion basketball is fine.
So one of us was right.
Yeah. And Royce doesn't even know what we put in his mouth anyway.
No, we'll inform him. That's not going to happen. The Knicks in the big game of the night favored by 7 over the Boston Celtics.
That's what they won the first time.
Seems a little high.
Can the Celtics not turn the ball over?
I don't know. Is Jordan Crawford playing?
Not enough. He can play all 48 minutes. Still not enough.
I mean, I like Doc being able to make adjustments. He saw what worked and what didn't.
I had this idea in the game preview. I don't know if you checked it out or not, but for the big adjustment, I said, put Jason Terry in pick and rolls. And I think this is an adjustment for both teams. I think the Knicks should attack a pick and roll with whoever Terry is guarding. And I think the Celtics have to put Jason Terry running pick and rolls and pick and pops to get it back to the most basic form of basketball for him and just say, look, you have to make plays. Like, you are now running the offense while you're in for the next 2 minutes. You have to make plays. Go out there and run a freaking basic pick and roll.
They're going to rehabilitate Jason Terry in the game, in the middle of the series.
It's a lot. I feel like you have to, like, expose him to all this, like, bad. It's like how in the Street Fighter movie, Bison builds up Blanka, like, just inundates him with all this horrible imagery. That's the only way you're bringing Jason Terry back. And then he'll be electric.
How did Raul Julia get in that movie? Who pitched him on that?
What project was he dying to get made in order to agree to do that movie? Was that his last movie? Have we talked about this on the podcast before?
Yeah, I think it was his last movie.
Okay.
Rest in peace. Miami Heat, in a playoff game, are favored by 14.5.
My goodness.
And it's gone up.
That's about right.
I've got him winning by, I think, 25.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot of points.
Well, I think the Bobcats, or the Bucks, when they're beaten down and they're just kind of, like, waiting for the clock to run out, are about as bad as the Heat's garbage time unit, and the garbage time unit really plays hard because Norris Cole wants stats.
Right.
So that's my thinking, is LeBron gets it to 17, and then the bench unit winds up nailing some threes.
Yeah, that's probably about right.
But, obligatory hedge.
But the Bucks might take this one.
You know, if Monte and Brandon take 20 shots and neither of them miss,
they've got a chance to cover.
They might cover.
I think they can cover the 14.5 if that happens. Maybe.
Larry Sanders is going to be more of a force. And he's young, and that's going to be hard for him. But he's... Yep.
And Irsan Ilyasova has to step up. Redick has to have a good game. Like, everyone's really got to contribute.
Everyone play the best you've ever played, and then you might be able to cover.
And then you can cover a 14.5 point spread.
I feel bad because I really liked watching the Bucks all year, and it's just the gap is just too wide, man.
Yeah, I still think they'll take a game in Milwaukee. I think they'll get one. Yeah, I think they'll get one.
Good on them if they do. I'll look forward to that. I'll DVR that one and rewatch it.
Yep.
Okay, we'll have lots of covers tomorrow. Back at it, man.
Yep. Thanks, man.